many of these here. Actually, I've already got this page. I need pages 1 and 2. This is page 3, so. Well, they're getting more back there. Thanks. One. Thank you. Okay. They all have the same little characters in the upper right-hand corner, but page 2 says page 2 on it, and page 3 says page 3 on it. We're running off some extra copies even as we speak. You with me? Yes? No? Okay. As much as we go. You need a copy here too, right?
No, I'm done with it.
Oh, that's what you think. You're gonna need this for those girls of yours. Are you sure? Okay. All right. This is something we're working through in the college group, and as fortune would have it, I just presented this material on Thursday night and no college students are here. So that works out pretty good. They don't get redundancy going on. We had gone to a really interesting seminar on courtship, marriage, dating, the purpose of which was to kind of spur the students on to determine what their principles were. And so the pastor who came kind of used shock tactics to say, do you have any biblical principles? Can you tell me what you believe about this? Can you tell me what you would do here? Can you tell me what the Bible said? Unfortunately, he did it in such a rapid-fire New York City style that everybody kind of sat there like, he didn't even give him a chance to think or to properly answer. But on the way back, we had been talking with our college students since last semester about this, and several of the students had said, you know, I really don't think that I could tell you what the Bible has to say or make specific applications to dating from the Bible. I really couldn't do that. I could give you some general things, you know, like you're supposed to date within your species, you know, just some general, that's a teaching from Genesis 1, thank you. But I don't think that I could actually go through and talk about some of these areas, much less specific things like at what point do you hold hands, all right? This particular speaker believed that holding hands was sinful unless you were married. He taught that holding hands is a sign of ownership. And so you don't own, and when you get married, you own your wife, is what he taught. Marriage is ownership. When you get married, you own your wife. You own your wife. What were the 5 ways, Anita, that you owned your wife? Come on, you can help me with this one. You being the ownee, tell me in what ways you're owned. What were the ways, remember? Spiritually, mentally, physically, your time, your money, that the husband owns, that was his principle. And he didn't do a lot in the Bible, but he just kind of laid it down, and it was kind of some craziness. But the whole point being, when you come to what the Scriptures say, can you actually sit down and say, here are the teachings of Scripture that apply to my life and to what I want to do? And basically, he took the approach. Notice I started here with our group with definitions. He defined dating as any time you are with someone of the opposite sex. So if you sit with someone at the lunch table, you're dating. Okay? If you are with them in the library, you are dating. If you're sitting next to them at a basketball game, you're married. Do you want some material here, Mary? Oh, yeah. The man who presented this material was Sherm's pastor. Yes, this was Sherm's pastor. Some of you don't know what that means. Others of you know all too well what that means. This was Sherm's pastor who presented this material. And the trouble was twofold. One, it was great in that his response was, okay, what does the Bible say? And so most people would sit around and go, well, I don't know. Does the Bible really talk about it? Their answer is no, and that's unsatisfactory. Going his direction is unsatisfactory as well. That was his definition of dating, though. I said, well, you know, since dating isn't a biblical term, the first thing you have to do is define what you mean by dating or courtship or engagement. We're not, for the college group, going to marriage because that's a separate set of counseling, marital counseling. But what do we mean by each of these, and then what does the Bible have to say? On the second page, I give definitions, but you can write them in here. I'm calling dating a friendship with possibilities. Dating is when when you are actually going with somebody to some place, and in your mind, there's possibilities that this can develop into something more. That is dating. If you just happen to be in a group of people and you're all headed out together, I'm not calling that, for my purposes, dating. If you do, then you have to rearrange that. I'm calling dating when in your mind you're saying, there's a possibility that this relationship could go someplace. When you're thinking in those terms, that is dating. Okay. I'm calling courtship when two consider themselves a couple. At the point where the two of you think of yourselves as, we're a couple, we have a relationship with each other, the two of us are separated in some sense, in some fashion, that is what I mean by courtship. We used to call that going together or going steady. I don't care what you call it. I don't consider that every time you date somebody, you're courting them. I think there's a different purpose for dating and a different purpose for courtship. Courtship is when you consider yourself a couple and you are actually working on building a relationship. Dating is when you're looking into the possibility that this might be somebody that I would like to have some kind of relationship with. You will actually date people that you wouldn't court. Why? Because dating is how you find out whether you actually want to have anything to do with this clod again. You know, and that's one of the problems. In this guy's system, it was like, well, anytime you're with a person, it's all courtship, it all leads to marriage, and therefore you have to go through. He had a two-page investigative sheet that you filled out on every potential person that you're even seen with. You had to talk to their pastor, you had to check out their home life, you had to find out all these references. Like, well, most people consider that dating. It's a sense of, I want to find out a little bit about this person. We'll talk about that in a moment. I'm calling dating, it's just, it's not the same as friendship. It's not the same as I'm just sitting and talking with this person. It's a friendship, but with possibilities. It's a relationship. We're friends, okay? But there's possibilities. This will go farther. Courtship is whatever point you two think of yourselves as a couple. That's courtship. And engagement is, on the next page, it's a prelude to marriage. It's that point where we have now entered into the phase of our relationship where it's a prelude to marriage. In some societies, there's a token. You know, you give a ring or something. Other places, it's not. At whatever point the two of you have concluded that this is leading to marriage, that's engagement. That's how I'm using the term. Those aren't biblical definitions. There's nothing biblical about those, okay? Every society has different definitions of what marriage is and where you're married. That is how I am using the terms, so that when we go through the material, you will understand what I mean by each step. Those steps, you can define them any way you want, but you got to know where somebody's coming from and what they're talking about. This whole series we're working on is called Developing Convictions. I don't think that what's necessary in teaching about dating is to teach young people what convictions they ought to have. I think we ought to be in the business of teaching young people how they will form convictions, how convictions are formed. I mean, there's a certain level where I really don't want my children doing certain things in their relationship, but I'm much more concerned that my children be mature and godly enough to reach those conclusions themselves. Because at some point, you can no longer put anything in. You as parents have minimal input into your children. I want them to know, whatever your relationship, have you formed godly convictions about it? Now, maybe their convictions aren't mine. Okay? Maybe, and I don't know if you found this, my children are willing to do things that would bother me. When I grew up, we wouldn't do that. I'll give you an example. When I grew up, and in my generations, you just didn't just up and go to the movies. This is a new generation. I'm not saying that's right. I'm not saying that's wrong. But in the 1960s, you didn't find church kids at any point in their lives going to the movies, correct? In fact, we didn't even show movies in church. We showed films. Okay, correct? With the advent of VCRs and different things, it's a new age. I'm not saying that I was right and they're wrong. I'm certainly not saying they were right and I'm wrong. I'm saying that the issue isn't that. The issue is, are they forming godly convictions about what they're doing? What I did and what my parents did were different standards. Our generation and my parents' generation were completely different standards. You want to tell the difference between our generation and the parents' generation? Look at the girls in makeup. My parents' generation used a lot more makeup than our generation did in the 60s. There was a generation where the women did their hair just right and put their face just on and went out, right? You could see that generational difference. Again, sometimes we tend to look at it and say, I know what I have found to be right and I got to get my kids to do it. What you have to do is, by God's grace, in your family and in the church, we teach this in the church, teach how to form godly convictions. What are convictions? They're inflexible guidelines that reflect your conscience. Any conviction is a guideline that's a reflection of your conscience. What you're comfortable or uncomfortable in doing. That's all convictions are. A conscience says, that bothers me to do that, or that doesn't bother me to do that. Now you have to understand, the Bible never says your conscience should be your guide. Because your conscience might not be bothered by doing something. I'm just talking about how life works. Everybody has a conscience. Everybody's conscience says, that's right, that's wrong, I'm good with it, I'm not good with it. Convictions are guidelines that make things fit within your conscience. A conviction is a guideline that says, if I do this, my conscience will accept it. That's all a conviction is. For instance, if you are in an Arab society, okay? In most Arab societies, they have a conviction that the women should be veiled, all right? Most especially a Bedouin society. That's because for a woman to go unveiled would bother the woman's conscience, all right? They have a conviction that reflects what their conscience tells them. Their conscience says that's wrong, okay? I'm not telling you it's right or wrong in God's sight. I'm not telling you it's right or wrong in Islam. What a conviction is a guideline that allows you to live within your conscience without constantly bothering yourself and stepping on your conscience. That's what convictions are. Godly convictions are something altogether different. Godly convictions grow out of a conscience that's guided by the Holy Spirit. When you grow up, your conscience, these guidelines, they come from all different kinds of places. Your conscience comes from experiences you've had, from church experiences, from family experiences, from your parents. All these lines come, and they almost form a mesh. And when you do something, you kind of throw it through that mesh, through that sieve. And if it makes it through, okay, it doesn't bother me. If it gets stuck, then your conscience says you shouldn't do that. The problem is that your conscience is never straight. The lines are never even. Sometimes you have your lines are too close together and things bother you that shouldn't bother you. The case in Romans chapter 14. Paul said, some of you people have a weak conscience. Things are bothering you that don't bother me. My principle is, if it didn't bother Paul, it must not have been wrong. But there were people whose conscience was so much narrower than Paul's. And then there are other people with these big gaping holes. It doesn't bother them at all. Couples today will live together and it won't bother them at all. Their conscience doesn't bother them whatsoever. In our day and age, people live together, but it bothered them and it bothered everybody else. Today, you can drive a truck through that clause. You know, people live together and they make these commitments, whatever that kind of commitment is. Well, we're moving in together or we're moving out together. That's a new stage in the relationship. Okay? When I grew up, that stage in a relationship was where the father showed up at your door with a shotgun. You know, that was that stage of the relationship. You know, you move in with my daughter is the day that, you know, I move this lead into your carcass. You know, things have changed. I'm not saying that the conscience is your guide. I'm saying a conviction is a reflection of whatever your conscience is. Your job is to have a conscience that's driven by God in the Bible, is to take your conscience you grew up with and to refit it for the Bible. and I've used this little thing down below. As a Christian, what does the Bible say about it? What does the Bible talk about? There are so many things in dating that the Bible never deals with specifically, but that's where you enter in from the bottom, all right? What does the Bible say about it? But then your convictions, whether you know it or not, also come from your family and from your culture. There are things that you will be comfortable with doing because your family's comfortable with it. They have nothing to do with the Bible. There will be things that you're uncomfortable in doing because your family is uncomfortable with them. They have nothing to do with the Bible. And what convictions are in New York State and what convictions are in California can be completely different. Just by families. A Christian here in New York State would have different convictions growing up out in the country than somebody growing up in San Francisco, where they're just glad you're dating somebody of the opposite sex, you know? So you have to understand that your convictions don't always simply represent the Bible. They represent what God has done in your family and in your culture. And you have to understand that God put you in your family for a reason. You can't just grow up and say, I want to make my own decisions. You didn't put yourself in your family. God did. God wanted you to have that family to guide your conscience. And as kids grow up in the church, they have to understand that not all the kids in the church share the same conscience and share the same convictions because not all the families in the church believe the same. And you can't go around looking at everybody who has different convictions and feeling that they're wrong about them. God didn't put all the families in the church in the same situation. He put you in your family because that's what he wanted for you. And families in the church don't even come from the same culture anymore. People come from different cultures. I don't know what might bother Go. Growing up in a culture, there would be things that he would be sensitive to that you and I wouldn't even notice. Or there'd be things that you and I might be sensitive to. And culture has to do, in part, with the age in which you grow up. I'll give you an example. When we were growing up, you could tell the difference between Southern Christians and Northern Christians. Why? I'll use the example of the girls from Bob Jones. Okay. The girls up north, okay, you didn't do certain things and the girls in south and you bothered. For instance, mixed bathing. Oh, boy. First of all, even the term mixed bathing is a southern term. When I heard about mixed bathing, I'm thinking, what kind of culture is that? What they mean is swimming. If you grew up in the 60s and 70s in the southern churches, did boys and girls swim together? No. That was sinful. And the fact that we did that in the north appalled them. Bowling, roller skating. How can you people in the north go bowling and go roller skating? Those are dens of iniquity, you know? Pardon? Yeah. But in the 60s, I'm just talking about my generation, the generation of the 60s, you went bowling or you went roller skating. In the south, it was still bad. On the other hand, you turned around and found out, like at Bob Jones, we had some kids who went to Bob Jones, and all of a sudden they found out that the Bob Jones dating weekends consisted of the guys and the girls getting together, and the girls always had to wear the long skirts. They'd play softball, right? They'd play soccer, and the girls would be out there in their long skirts for these weekends. They had the room they called the dating room? Too bad Walt wasn't here. They saw the date. Pardon? The dating parlor. Okay. Where you sit, never touching that individual, in plain sight of chaperones who walk around, and the two of you sit and talk. They have a dating parlor. Okay. Very strict. And we would come down there and say, are you guys nuts? But then they would do things like the girls down south wear a whole lot more makeup and high heels. Man, if you were a girl growing up in our youth group and wore makeup and high heels, it was like, you know, aha. You know, we know you're a tootsie. You know, we know there's something up with you. Correct? Do you judge people by whether they wear lots and lots of makeup? Well, in the North, we tend to do that. In the South, as women grow up, there's much more of an emphasis on cosmetics and those things than there are in the North. That's a real regional difference that they have. The problem I want to tell you is that's cultural. And you can't look down at their convictions and say they're wrong, nor can they look at our convictions, because part of your convictions don't come from the Bible. They come from your culture. And part of your conviction come from maturity and your own experiences. The things that I have a conviction about in many cases come from my own personal experience. I, under no circumstance, will allow any drop of alcohol to come within my house. I won't be in somebody's house for any length of time where there's alcohol. I grew up in a home with alcoholics. I grew up in a home where there was drinking. I have a terrible conviction against that. That bothers me to no end. And I have not 1 ounce of room in my life for that. When you go to Israel, there's wine on the table among Christians. They grew up in a Jewish culture. Okay? I'm not in Israel. I don't tell them that what they're doing is wrong, but I don't fit my convictions because I can find somebody around the world who does it different. You know, people play this game, you know. Well, you know, the Aborigines do this, and they seem to get along fine, you know. Don't talk to me about the Aborigines. You know, they don't have to go to my high school. You know, they don't have my parents. They don't. You have certain things in your convictions that fit you. Something we talk to especially the college students about. Do you know how many people who have been abused physically or sexually in their homes growing up? Among Christians, that figure is enormous, and we never talk about it. Well, when you're dating somebody, a large degree, if they have that problem, do you know what kind of their convictions are going to be determined by that experience? Are you even experienced enough to realize that they may have a problem there and to think about that and saying, wait a second, if I'm getting in a relationship with somebody who's had these experiences, they're going to have convictions and problems and areas that I better be aware of. You know, the figure that they're coming up with in Bible college is 3 in 10. Bible college, 3 in 10. We don't, it's like, oh, well, this is no small problem. This is a huge problem. But that one experience in their life, especially for a young girl, that one experience will have a powerful factor on their convictions, on those inflexible guidelines. Nothing to do with Scripture. Nothing to do with Scripture. Maturity. I'll tell you, as you get older, your convictions change. They don't always get looser. They don't always get tighter. But I have a different view of certain things now. I'm convinced there's a reason why 20 and 30-year-olds have children and not 40 and 50-year-olds. Correct? I find usually 20 and 30-year-olds are much tighter. By the time you get to be a grandparent, it's like, what are you sweating the small stuff for? And your kids are looking at you like, are you kidding me? You know, you would have beat me to a pulp if I did that. I couldn't possibly have gotten away with that. Well, we changed. What do you mean? Bill Cosby had the phrase. He said, yeah, these are old people trying to get into heaven. No, he said, so you can't count on them for convictions anymore. They just want to get into heaven, so they're trying to be kind, you know. Actually, if you want to experience this phenomena, the easiest way to do it is just have several children and listen to your oldest children tell you what you're doing wrong with your youngest children. Oh, that is the oldest children, you know what you let them get away with? Do you know how your standards, you've seen there, right? Your standards have slipped. They know so much about raising children. Well, maturity does tend to change you. And again, I'm not saying it makes you better. I'm not saying it makes you worse. But I don't want to be the kind of person that maturity doesn't change me. When guys have a ordination, and they ask Dave Rising this question, would you be willing to sign this statement and say, I'll never change from it? And this kind of a trick question, and some other pastor said, I wouldn't do that. You're telling me that you'll never change one opinion on anything you've written down here for the rest of your life? I want that kind of pastor who's that broad-minded, who thinks I knew everything at 25, and I'll never change my opinions for the rest of my life. Maturity changes you. By the way, your ability to make convictions is expressed by maturity. There's a reason why we don't have dating going on in Christian circles among 12-year-olds. Do they have the maturity to form a conviction? That doesn't make them rotten. It's not like they're a bunch of terrible, evil monsters. But if you're not old enough to know how to make a conviction, you're not old enough to enter into a relationship with another person. That's a dangerous thing. It takes maturity to do certain things. It takes a process of years, and it takes a process of growth. And by the way, godly convictions I have grow. Convictions aren't set for you. You grow into them. Next page. I think that when you're talking about, am I in a godly relationship, what you have to say is, what's the purpose of where I'm supposed to be at this stage. What the purpose of dating for? If I'm fulfilling the purpose of dating, that's godly. I don't have the same purpose for dating as I have for engagement. So what I'm doing at each stage has to be appropriate to that stage. That's all that it's about. That's all maturity is about. What's appropriate for a 10-year-old and what's appropriate for a 16-year-old are two different things. That's really good to know when you're raising a child who's 16 and one who's 10. You know, I'm sorry, what's appropriate for you and what's appropriate for them? Well, the same thing in a relationship. And the key is to say, what's this relationship all about at this stage? And when you say, is this appropriate for dating or for a relationship? Should I do this? Well, my point is, what stage are you at? And I can tell you, and you can work by using this process. Go through the Bible, work with your parents, work with your family in maturity. Is what you're doing at that stage appropriate to what the purpose for that stage is? Let's take a look. I say that dating is a friendship with possibilities. Okay? Dating isn't the same as these other things. And here is what I see as the purpose of dating. One, to simply become better acquainted with someone. To find out, what do I know about this person? To say, you know, I have an interest in this person. Let's see if that interest can become an affection for them. There's a difference between being interested in somebody and saying, I have a great affection for them. I love them or I'm in love with them. Dating is the time when you're saying, what I have is an interest. I want to find out if there's anything to it. That's what it's all about. And we shouldn't make it anything more. I don't think that we should make dating into something that is an enormously huge step. Yes?
I have a quick question, because I'm a child of the 70s. Dating was a step omitted.
Right.
In other words, if you went out with anybody once, you were perceived as a couple.
Yes.
It's
very much that way in some Christian circles. It's very much that way in Christian day school circles. In fact, you don't even need to go out with them. You just need to sit with them at lunch. There's huge dating relationships that's built that two people are sitting at the table at lunch. They're going together because they sat with each other. My point is, I think that one of the things that happens in relationships between men and women is, I'm interested in that person. I want to find out more about them. I have an interest in them, and dating is simply saying, can I have a friendship with them? A friendship is a godly relationship where you like them, you're interested in them, and they put something into your life. That's what friendship is. Dating is a friendship looking towards maybe a little bit more. So it starts with friendship, but always the possibility of more. So the first thing is just to become acquainted. I don't think that it's wrong to date somebody to say, I think there are certain standards. We'll talk about friendship in a moment. Even friendship has standards. I don't think you should date unsaved people. I don't care. I realize you're not marrying them, but I don't think that you should have an interest, dating with an interest in an unsaved person. But you would date people that you would not necessarily marry because you're finding out, hey, is this somebody I'm interested in? Another thing, it's to interact with someone in a male-female role situation. Until you date, you don't know how to behave with people of the opposite sex. I was explaining, I thought the girls would all know this in the group. How do you know when a guy is feeling awkward and embarrassed? Oh, we don't know that, I said. Oh, come on now. No, until you date a while, you don't really know to look for the signs. How do you stop being awkward and embarrassed? How do you know how to have the right role with that person? Can you spot a couple that's just dating for the first time? Oh, yes, you can. You can spot them because of that awkwardness. They're trying to decide, how do I fit? What should I do? What does it mean to be the male in this role? What's it mean to be the female in this role? Until you date, you don't even know what that's all about. You can tell a guy's awkward by his hands and his feet. Guys are incredibly, they grow gawky, and they don't know what to do with their hands and their feet. If a guy is embarrassed, you'll see what he either hides his hands, or what he does with his hands, or does he trip, does he stumble, does he hit things? Yeah, look at Mark. Yeah, I see. Mark starts moving his hands right away. That's a simple sign. You can tell when a guy is embarrassed by what he does with his hands. Okay? Girls have different signals that they give, but part of dating is simply saying, how can I be a male and fulfill the role of a male in the dating relationship? What am I supposed to do? There are certain things that all societies expect, all right? And part of, and again, these convictions about what you should do, they don't all come from the Bible. I can't tell you and go through the Bible telling you everything, but culture has something to do with it. For instance, in America, a man does certain things when he dates. Okay? Things have changed, but in most cases, in Christian circles, the guy pays. Now, that changes, but not in Christian circles yet. The guy pays. It's a male role to do that. You observe courtesies towards them. When you're walking in school, I trust that guys are courteous towards women. But when you're dating, that rises to a very important level. Do you wait for them? Do you open the door for them? How do you decide where you go and what you do? That gentle game of saying, how do you find out what she wants to do without looking like a wimp? Okay, how does she let you know? Women haven't learned how to run things from the back seat yet. So they're in that process of letting the guy know what he should do without looking too bossy, correct? They want to guide and say, we're going here, but they don't want to look like, you know, I'm leading you around. For the same reason why a girl who's 5 feet doesn't want to date a guy who's 3. They don't want to look like they're the guy in the relationship. This time of dating has nothing to do with necessarily building a deeper relationship. It's finding out what you're supposed to be. How can I simply act as a male in a male-female role situation? And that's what dating is. It's male and female roles. And if you think it's anything else, you're kidding yourself. Because it doesn't work that way. People don't think that way. And finally, to develop discernment about your own needs, desires, and compatibilities. Part of dating is to find out, well, what kind of guys do I actually like to be with? You know, you think you're interested in some guy, and then you go out and you realize, if you don't think that happens, talk to women about the losers that they have ended up dating. Talk to some of the ladies and find out about the losers. What was the term that your Hebrew teacher used, Anita? Ephes Gadol, the big zero. You know, it's a Hebrew term, the big zero. Well, what is the big zero? You start dating, you'll find out what the big zero is. I can tell you a couple people my wife dated that I thought were the big zero, okay? I was not pleased. She dated them, or in this situation, it would be called a date. You see, it works, dear. She didn't consider it a date. I found out later and considered it a date. But these are the kinds of situations where you find out, what about this person? I'm interested in them, but do I even like this kind of person? You find out what you like to do. Part of dating is you do things that you might not do otherwise. Okay? Part of dating is actually finding out, hey, do I even like doing this? You end up going to things that you wouldn't go to alone, or doing things that you might not have done alone. Part of dating is finding out about yourself. I don't recommend that a person be a huge, big dater, that they date a million people. I think that can be very, very dangerous. I've seen a lot of people who become very jaded and say, and nothing satisfies them. But I don't think that every time you are with somebody, you're courting them. It's a couple. Second step, courtship. If you're becoming a couple at this stage, if you're thinking of yourself as a couple, that means you consider yourself to have a relationship with this person that's a little deeper than friendship. Which means, one, you want to focus on that bond between you, and two, you actually consider that person a potential mate. At the stage where you're saying, this person could be a potential mate for me, and we are a couple, that's what I call courtship. I'm not necessarily saying you got to give them, you know. What did we used to give in high school? Actually, the girls would end up wearing all the guys' stuff. They'd wear the guy's class ring. They'd put so much yarn around it. You know, they'd wrap it in yarn, or they'd wear it around a necklace, or they'd wear the guy's sweater. You get a letter in sports, and the next thing you know, some girl's wearing it, you know, and wearing your sweater and wearing your whatever. But there are tokens that are exchanged. At some point, you're saying, we two are together. And it's all about you and a potential mate. And so you've got to do things that are appropriate to that. Courtship isn't all about the two of you just having fun. Fun is part of it, but at this stage, if your purpose is the two becoming more of a couple, you've got to do things that will develop you into a couple. Let me give you my idea of doing of courtship and going to the movies. I think that going to the movies is one of the most foolish activities in courtship. What you want to do is take a situation where you need to be talking to somebody, where you need to be doing things face to face. So what do? You get in a car where you're both facing forward. You drive to a movie theater. You pay enormous amounts of money for some very small amounts of food. You go in, and the two of you sit down, both facing a screen. Don't talk to each other for the duration of whatever this movie is. And then you get up, and in a very false environment, walk out and have to come up with something. You got to be Siskel and Ebert. The guy is really desperate for something intelligent to say about the movie. You know, it's really, he is desperate. He's thinking, what can I say about this? Well, I really thought that the plot line was a little weak. It's like, oh, brother guy, you know, you should stick to sports, you know. You know, literature critique isn't your field. But he's desperate to do that because he's talking about something that he may or may not be absolutely comfortable with. And you put yourself in a situation where you're not even facing each other. I think, for instance, if you go out on a date, especially with two couples, why do you sit next to the person you're dating? Why don't you sit across the table from them? And if you can't look at them and see their face and see how they're reacting and talk to them, you go out on a date, right? Even on a double date, the two of you slide into a seat, you're sitting, you don't talk to that person there. There is nothing about that relationship that actually builds the two of you as a couple. I'm not saying it's sinful to do these things, but if what you want to get done is to grow with this person, do things that make you grow. Do things that make you closer to that person. It's to move from affection to godly love. In dating, we're talking about there's an interest there. It moves to courtship when there's an affection between the two of you. Okay? And what you want to do is, the courtship is to move that affection into godly love. That's the point. I care for you. I really like you. There's something special there. I want to grow that into what the Bible calls godly love. Well, are you doing the kinds of things that promote godly love? Are you getting involved in the kinds of things that actually make love very difficult? For example, giving gifts. Do you know how hard it is to give gifts that are appropriate, that are right? And do you know how difficult it is in dating to know what gift to give when? We want to talk about what kids should and shouldn't do. A large part of dating is, no, wait a second. How involved do you want to get on these things that are very confusing? Every time you give a gift to somebody, they say, why? Correct? And they say, how do I respond? Human relationships, right? Somebody in your family sends you a Christmas card. What's your first thought? Oh, man. Did I send them one? Do I have to send them one? What, giving gifts within the family. Oh, who are we going to have to give gifts to this year? You know, exchanging gifts. Well, in a relationship, you have to be very careful at what level and how you're giving gifts. A lot of people find that giving gifts becomes expected. The amount of the gift, the size of the gift becomes a false token of affection. Well, if you're growing from affection to godly love, you want to make sure that what you do is promoting that and you're not involved with activities that mask it. 3, to develop a capacity for commitment. How do you know that you're able to be committed to someone? How do you know you're ready to have a commitment to someone? Courtship is a time when you're actually developing, hey, a commitment means I need that person. A commitment means that person needs me. Courtship is that time where you figure out, do I need that person? Does that person need me? Am I willing and ready to be needed? That's what commitment is. They need me, I need them. That doesn't just come. That's part of the maturing process. And you're finding out, can I be committed to this person? What about this person's circumstances? Is this person able to commit to me? Not everybody you meet who you care for is able to commit to you, able to commit to anybody, ladies. Okay? This is a generation where you're going to find out that there's a whole generation of guys who don't know how to spell the word commitment. They don't know what it, they call it the C word. Well, you're going to have to find out. And by the way, there's a generation of women who do not know how to foster godly commitment, who do things like set deadlines. Tell him he has to do this or make him do that. You'll never get a commitment out of somebody by an ultimatum. Commitments have to grow. Even more, it's a time to decide if this individual is the one for you. That's what courtship's all about. And there's no doubt about it. Courtship, you're saying, I want to find out if that's the one. It doesn't mean that every when you're involved with courtship, it has to be the one, but you're looking towards that. And you move from courtship into engagement when you can make all those decisions. When you can say, this person is my potential mate. When you can make that decision, you're ready for engagement. When you can say, we don't just have an affection and like each other, we love each other. We are in love and love each other. When you can say that we both have a capacity for commitment and are ready to be committed, and when you can say this one is the right one for you, when you've met all those goals, you're done with that phase and you're ready for the next phase.
What's your personal position on the issue? You said the one quote.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard different positions from a Christian perspective.
Right.
I've heard some people teach that you need to find the one that God has for you.
Right.
Do you believe that God has chosen your
yes.
future?
I believe it. I can't defend everything, but the Bible teaches that every last thing in my life was set down by God. Every last thing. I don't believe I'll be capable of always knowing in a certainty that this, that God's certainty I'll be able to apprehend. But I believe that God has one man for the pastor of this church. Don't you believe that? Do you think that marriage is anything less? You know, I think it's the same thing. I think that the way you search for a pastor is like dating. You're actually dating these guys, okay? And then the next step is courtship. And then, you see, you're going through this same phase in the pastoral search. You're actually doing this. Well, I do believe that. I honestly believe it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I hear the other side talk more.
Right.
So there are many people out there, all of whom could be
right. Very self-centered thing. And what you're trying to do is discern God's will. And you can't, if you're not mature, you won't be certain about anything. An immature person won't be certain that they should buy that color car versus that color car. An immature person won't have the capacity to understand the smallest amount of God's will. It doesn't mean God doesn't have a will. It means they won't be able to see it, so he won't show it to them. God doesn't cast his pearls before swine. Immature people have to make their decisions by their own weaknesses, are forced to make their decision on the different places than a mature person. A mature person is willing to say, that's a decision I can live with. I don't think you can always, when you're dating, come to the place of saying, I don't ever have a doubt. But you can come to the place of saying, no, I don't have a serious doubt. No, I really believe this is the one. That's a place you've got to be able to reach. But that's not where dating is all about. Dating isn't down here with the engagement and the courtship. There are things, and the last page we deal with, what are the rules in the Bible about friendship? And basically what I do is I just go through with them and I say, read that verse and tell me what that verse talks about friendship. Exodus 33:1. I want to read that, Gary, just one example. Exodus 33:11, excuse me. Since dating is friendship with possibilities, let's say see what the Bible says about friendship and apply those rules to dating. Okay, let's just work it on that basis. Somebody read Exodus 33:11, Gary.
So the Lord spoke to Moses face to face, as a man speaks to his friend.
Okay, pause. What's the principle about friendship there? Pardon? As opposed to what? Or, how was God speaking to Moses that he wasn't speaking to the people? And how is he speaking to the people? Through Moses. Okay. Apply that to dating. Give me a principle about friendship that applies to dating. Very simple. Exactly. One of the simplest things is, if you want to have you don't work through friends, find out what so-and-so says. And so-and-so says, you know, that kiddie stuff? If you're doing that kiddie stuff, you're not ready to date. If you're doing that, find out, if you can't walk up to somebody, look them in the eye, and say, okay, you may be embarrassed, it may be hard, like putting a contact lens in for the first time, you know? And how many of you can actually touch your eye like that? Okay, I know, drives Mike crazy. Takes a while to be able to do that. But if you can't actually look them in the face and say, okay, you shouldn't be dating. Friends can look at each other. Friends act face to face. I would even apply this principle to what I was saying about even how you sit. If you're going to be friends and you want to develop a friendship, friends talk face to face. Then do things where the two of you are talking to one another, where the two of you are meeting face to face. Don't do things where the two of you are kind of sitting there in a group and all staring up. That's not the best thing for dating. Whether or not that's appropriate in other circumstances is different. Friends talk face to face. The Lord spoke to Moses like a man speaks to his friend. Take the rule of friendship and now apply it to the special incidents of friendship with dating. Let's do one more here. Deuteronomy 13:6. Pick someone there. Pastor Bohinsky, would you read that? Deuteronomy 13:6. And emphasize the part as you get to it about the friend. Yes. As soon as you find that. Okay.
If your brother, the son of your mother, or son of your daughter, the wife of your bosom, or your friend, who is as your own soul.
There we go.
Yeah.
Then read verse 8, which is the conclusion of that. If your friend seeks to do this, then what?
You shall not